This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Joining me right now over the telephone to talk some NBA basketball, great friend of the show. We have Jameson Welsh from BelieveTheHypeNBA.com, and there are a lot of storylines that are really picking up in the NBA as we get down to the final 20 games of the regular season. Jameson, as always, I appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Not a problem, Jordan. Thanks for having me as always, man. Definitely appreciate it.
Let's talk a little bit about the MVP race first off. Russell Westbrook, this guy has put together one of the most historically great seasons in NBA history, and that's not an overstatement. That's not becoming a prisoner of the moment. This guy is averaging 32 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and Jameson, even more impressive, he's gone over 40 points four times while accumulating a triple-double. It's absolutely insane. Had a 58-point performance the other night. Yes, it was in a losing effort, but still, this guy is playing on a completely different level from anyone else in the league. And, you know, I always go back to this. As far as individual awards go, they don't do a whole lot for me outside of the MVP in the NBA. It is the most coveted individual award in professional sports. I put it right up there with the Heisman, which, of course, is number one. So we have these individual awards, and I think the MVP stands above the rest in the professional realm, which means it gets a little bit more attention. I am absolutely flabbergasted that people voting on this award actually believe in their hearts and their heads that we have a two- or three-pony race for the MVP in the NBA. It's insane to me.
Well, the MVP award has different definitions of different people. Like, it's a tough thing because it's not, the MVP award is not the best player on the best team. It's not, you know, who has the best stats. It has different definitions to everyone. So it's really difficult to gauge exactly what it means or what it should be. It's just one of those things where if you ask 10 different NBA people, you're going to get four different answers on the MVP this year. That's just kind of how it goes. Like, you're going to, someone's going to say LeBron. Someone's going to say Russ. Someone's going to say Harden. Someone's going to say Kawhi. This is kind of how it goes. Everyone has their different, you know, thoughts and opinions on the award. It's one of those things where if you named Russell Westbrook MVP, I wouldn't be mad at it. If you named Harden or Kawhi, I really wouldn't be upset either because I get it. Those guys are having awesome seasons on teams that are contenders and win a championship. So I get it, but when Russell Westbrook's having a triple-double every other night, it's pretty special. And again, like I said, I understand if someone wants to give him the MVP. If he wins it, I have no problems with that at all. But the history of the league, and we know how things work out, it's just almost impossible for a guy that's a seventh-seeded team out west to get MVP. Like, that's just not going to happen. I mean, Kobe didn't have the triple-doubles in 06, but he had a similarly, you know, great year that Russ is having, and we know how that turned out. He came like in fourth or fifth in the MVP race. So we'll see what happens, but if you're a seventh seed in your conference, it's almost impossible to win the MVP race. That's just how it goes. The history of the league shows that.
It shouldn't. I mean, I know that's the way it is, but look, at what point in time do we stop trying to be cute about this and give the award to someone on the best team and we actually start looking at the historical significance? I mean, this is a stat that is unbelievable. He leads the league in usage at 42.1. If it holds up, that's going to be the single season usage, the highest single season usage percentage in NBA history. He also has a league-leading 55.8 assist percentage. That will be the third highest in NBA history. So at what point in time do you stop looking at who's on the best team and who's contending for an NBA championship and look at the historical significance of what an individual has actually accomplished? Because I'm telling you right now, there are certain players in league history where if they were putting up this type of season, there would be no doubt about it. The MVP race would have been decided 2 or 3 weeks ago. I just can't wrap my head around it. I know, I agree with you. It means 10 different things to 10 different people, but in this case, it shouldn't. It's irresponsible because this is one of the greatest individual seasons in league history.
It definitely is. And here's the thing. If OKC gets on, if they win a few more games and they wind up being the fifth seed out west, or even the, I don't think they can catch the fourth seed, but if they get back into that cluster of teams, then anything is possible because then you have a guy that, if he gets the fifth, out west, and you're like, okay, well, he had this great season with this team, and he's the fifth seed. Then, you know, your argument's a lot stronger, but, man, it's an amazing season. It's going to be a shame. It'd be like someone batting 400 in baseball and not winning MVP. Like, that's pretty much what it's like. It's going to be like that because this has never been seen before. A guy's getting a triple-double on average every other night, it seems. Like that. And if he's not getting a triple-double, the nights he's not getting triple-doubles, he's very close to getting one. So it's one of those things where, man, it's a remarkable season, but the way the media votes for this award, it's very tricky. It would not surprise me to see Kawhi Leonard steal this award, though. I can see Kawhi Leonard with another month of the season, another 5 weeks of the season. If he does what he keeps on doing and the Spurs get the one seed out west, I would not surprise me to see him be the MVP award in mid-May.
No, I agree with you. And again, when I say that it's clear cut and dry, it's no knock on what Kawhi Leonard has accomplished. I love Kawhi. I think he's one of the best two-way players in the league. And then you look at, you know, James Harden, he's put together a magnificent season. But Jameson, when you look at the history of sports, there were a couple of awards and a couple of accomplishments that were almost mythical to us. Okay, I never thought that we would see another baseball player win the Triple Crown Award. And then we see it. You know, Miguel Cabrera steps up and he wins the Triple Crown. I never thought, every year I wanted it, but I just thought I'm never going to see a horse win the Triple Crown. And then along comes American Pharoah and he does it. In that category, there's somebody averaging a triple-double for an NBA season. It's happened with Oscar Robertson way before your time, way before my time. So it's almost like mythical that it could happen in this day and age. And it's not set in stone that Westbrook is going to do it. But I think if you average a triple-double for an entire season, yeah, I put that individual accomplishment up there with a horse winning the Triple Crown and with a baseball player winning the Triple Crown because it never happens. I mean, we've just never seen it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's one of those things where it's definitely jaw-dropping. We're all in awe. It's to the point right now where when Russ drops a triple-double, we're not even surprised anymore. And, again, we have to find a way to come to a common definition of MVP because right now there's no common definition, unfortunately. No one has a common definition. Is it the best player on the best team? Is it the guy that's most valuable to his team? Is the guy that's had the best season? What does the MVP actually mean? And until we get a common definition of it, we're going to have the same problems every year.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Again, our guest right now is Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Let's move on and talk about something else that's happening in the NBA. A pretty historical feat last night for Dirk Nowitzki. He joins some elite company in the 30,000-point club. One thing that is not debatable, right? He's the greatest European player to ever grace the NBA. You look at who he joins in this category. I mean, Kareem, Karl Malone, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Wilt Chamberlain, and now you throw Dirk Nowitzki in that category. Pretty epic. I mean, that's a legendary historical moment for Dirk and for the Dallas Maverick franchise.
Yeah, no, Dirk is, when it comes to Euros, he's the best Euro guy. International guy gets tricky because Hakeem Olajuwon came over from Nigeria to come to college here, so that's a little different story. But in terms of European, yeah, Dirk is the guy that, he's the guy. I mean, Powell is probably second, you think about it, but Dirk is definitely first. What he's done for the game, he's made it acceptable for bigs to shoot three-pointers and being able to, for that to be a part of your offense and for it to be accepted. He also made it acceptable for a seven-footer to be without primarily a post player. Because when he came in the league was primarily a post league. You have a big, you throw it down to him, he does some post stuff, and that's that. Now you have bigs that are primarily jump shooting bigs. Every team has a pick-and-pop big, it seems now, and he's a big part of that. So his imprint on the game historically is huge, and it'll never be forgotten. But he's the first big that has that kind of range, that kind of handle, and that kind of feel for the game when you can go 30 feet out and, just shoot it with no problems at all. And he's a true matchup nightmare. He's a great, great player, amazing player. And it's crazy because if those seasons in 06 and 07 turn out differently, then we're thinking about Dirk in a totally different light, and we're probably thinking of him as a top 20 type player, maybe even higher. But those seasons didn't turn out the way they did. But he still had a great run in 2011 that will never be forgotten.
There's always that conversation. If you're down by one, who do you want to take the last shot? You can take anybody in NBA history. And I've always said this. I'm going to go back to it. There are two guys that stand out. amongst the rest. Give me Kareem and give me Dirk Nowitzki. And people sitting here saying, really, over Michael Jordan, over the likes of Kobe Bryant or Larry Bird? Yes, I'm going to tell you why. If you need a shot to win the game, those are the only two players in league history that are going to get a good look. There's no doubt. There's nothing. I mean, you know you're going to get the shot off. Anyone else in league history? Yeah, you know, they may be a little bit more clutch at certain times. But look, if you need a shot to win the game, you know that Dirk Nowitzki is going to get it off. You know Kareem's going to get the skyhook off anytime. I think that you really have to put Dirk in that elite category as far as scorers go. Last night just proves it.
Well, here's the thing. When it comes to the kind of basket you need, the thing with Dirk is he's so versatile that you can get a three. You can also put him out from 15 feet out, and the look is going to be good, and the shot's going to be good. Here's the thing. With Dirk, for the longest time, I believe for over a 10-year stretch, like, he was the best guy in, like, game-winning situations. I think it was, like, him, Carmelo, and I think Kobe and a couple other guys. Like, Joe Johnson was on, high on that list, Paul Pierce. But he was, like, the number one guy on that list with, like, under 30 seconds, you know, game-winning or game-tying situations. He was very good in it because, like you mentioned, he can get any shot off. You're not blocking his shot. You're not going to block his jump shot. That's not going to happen. So if he gets to a spot on the court or if you run a play where he's wide open, he's going to hit the shot. And in his prime in the mid-2000s, he was amazing. He was a true sight to see. And he was unguardable. He's a guy that even if you got physical with him, that worked a little bit. But at the same time, if he was able to get a shot off so quickly, man, it was very, very difficult to deal with. But that being said, I think his imprint on the game is more than people think of at the moment. And we won't think about it until he retires and is long gone from the game. But his imprint on the game, man, having a guy at 7 foot, being able to shoot from anywhere, being able to handle the ball a little bit, and be accepted, for that to be accepted, and now you have a whole generation of guys like that, is huge.
We're going to end by talking about the Utah Jazz tonight. They return here to KOAL. They take on the Houston Rockets. I'm really, really intrigued by this game. It's an 8 p.m. start time, or a 6 p.m. start time, excuse me, right here on KOAL 550. We'll send you out to David Locke and Ron Boone for the play-by-play call. Jameson, this is an important game. The Jazz have won three consecutive. They got a very important three-game stretch. You get Houston tonight, Oklahoma City on Saturday. Both of those games are on the road. And then what could be a potential first-round matchup against the Clippers on Monday at Vivint Smart Home Arena. I think we're going to learn a lot about this Jazz team. You say, what, 64 games into the season? We haven't learned enough about them? Yeah, they're a 50-win team, but this is a very important three-game stretch, and I think it'll set the tone for what to expect the rest of the way for the team.
Well, here's the thing with the Jazz. The Jazz, they just have to find consistency. Because how many times in the year do we see a good win fall by a bad loss? And every year, young teams have to be expected, but they have to find consistency, especially going to the playoffs. Now, the one playoff matchup, I don't think that's good for them. I don't think the Clippers are a good playoff matchup for them. I don't. I think the Clippers do have a lot of experience, especially in the early rounds, and that would be a problematic matchup. But with that being said, I do think the Jazz can hold their own versus pretty much anyone they're able to match up with. I think Memphis, they're able to hold their own again. I think they can hold their own against the Clippers, but I think that's a bad matchup just personnel-wise. So we'll definitely see. But for the Jazz, they got to get consistency and they got to stay healthy. Their biggest issue this year has been health. They've missed guys in and out of the lineup the whole year, whether it's been George Hill, whether it's been Hood. You know, they've missed key guys, and they have to be healthy. If they're going to do anything this year in the playoffs, they have to stay healthy. With that being said, though, this is a huge, huge turning point year for them because talking to Gordon Hayward 2 years ago, basically it was like, all right, we're in a wait-and-see situation. We're in a rebuilding situation. Now, to see all that come together, now be a playoff team, it's pretty impressive.
Jameson, it's always a pleasure to talk NBA basketball with you here on the show. Thanks for always making time for us. It's the fun time of the year. Again, the final 20 games of the regular season, so we'll get you on again here relatively soon.
Not a problem. Thanks for always having me. I'll see you soon.
We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this.